Welcome to the 13 Skulls. A journey into a world that is just beyond our comprehension. The world of the paranormal.
Welcome to the 13 Skulls Podcast. In this episode, we're going to be taking a look at a UFO spotted during a morning TV broadcast, a monolith structure captured on Mars by NASA's orbiting camera, an acid-spitting death worm hunt, and 10 incredibly bizarre and crappy ways to die. This and much more coming up in this 29th episode of the 13 Skulls Podcast.
Chains worn by all these servants, chains wrapped around their master soul. Does the devil call you by name? And do you answer him the same? Are you steady on your feet? Do you seek a place for your retreat? Well, comfort me. I will comfort you. Comfort me. Lay your head right here. Comfort me.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. My name is TJ, coming to you from Fort Worth, Texas. Let's go ahead and get the formalities buried in the dirt and out of the way. If you want to shoot me an email, the emails are the13skulls@gmail.com. Or if you want some info about the show or whatever, send it to info@the13skulls.com. If you'd rather call me and give me a voicemail, which we do have a couple of those today for you later on in the show, you can give me a call at 206-338-2205 or 817-986-0219. And like I said before, if you really want to support the show, give me a review in iTunes, give me a vote in Podcast Alley, or let me know where you're listening from by signing the Frapper map. Now, one extra thing I did want to talk to you guys about iTunes, I realized that some of you guys are having a little bit of issues with getting those current stuff with the feed in iTunes. Well, I realized that the old feed was still there. And some of you might have it. Well, I resubmitted the new feed to iTunes. So when you go to iTunes and you search for the 13 Skulls, what you'll come across are two different feeds in iTunes. One of them has the 13 Skulls logo and one of them does not. One of them, you know, has explicit on there. The other one does not. Go for the one that does not have the picture for the show. That has the most recent content. It is the feed for the show that is right now for the show on the13skulls.com. The feed that has the 13 Skulls logo, that has 30 different reviews for it, you can just ignore that one because that's the old feed. Now, it does have the new content in there, but for some reason, it's not showing it soon enough. So basically, if you go to iTunes, you search for the13skulls.com, you'll see two feeds. Go for the one that does not have the 13 Skulls logo. That is the most up-to-date one. Now, I'm in works with iTunes and Apple and whoever it is that you got to contact for that. There's a lot of red tape for it, but I'm trying to get the old feed taken away and the new feed with the show's logo on there, but I haven't gotten to that point yet. So anyway, I'll shut up now and we'll get on with the show.
PJ, it's Lobo. Just calling to check in and to say I'm catching up on the back episodes. Loving every minute of it, thrashing out. Keep up the great work. See if I can scrounge together some different articles on cryptids, because that seems to be my forte. But again, I just wanted to call in and give you kudos for the awesome job you do and the great show you do. Take it easy, buddy. Thanks a lot.
Well, thanks a lot, Lobo. I really do appreciate you calling in, man. And thanks. I'm glad you're thrashing out to the music that's in the show, man. There's been quite a few people that don't like it, but to be honest with you, that's why I put it in there, because I like it, and I'm glad that somebody else is getting some enjoyment out of it. And man, I tell you what, if you ever get any articles or anything you find interesting that you want to submit to the show, send it to me. I'll throw it in there. I love to see what interest you get, you guys, by, you know, what you send to me, which we have a lot of listener-submitted content for this episode. Again, I do appreciate you guys calling in and, you know, leaving me a voicemail. I'm glad to know that somebody likes it enough to participate. So thanks again, Lobo. Really do appreciate it, man. Now, the next phone call that I received was from Mike out at Universe of Mystery.
Okay, so I'm hoping this is the 13 Skulls, and this is TJ. This is Mike from Universe of Mystery calling to thank you for helping us out with the promo, putting up the ad on your page and all that. That was great. Really appreciate it. But I'm freaked out because I was trying to call you back, and I kept trying to listen for the number again and again. I think I got it right, but the first time I called, it went to Texas. And the second time I called, it went to Seattle. And the third time I called, it went to Arizona. And my dog started barking like crazy, and for some weird reason. So I'm hoping I'm calling the right place, but this may be just somebody's voicemail, which, sorry, but yeah, I'm just trying to reach TJ from the 13 Skulls. If this is you, TJ, great show. I love your show. I've been listening to it for a long time, and keep up the great work, and thanks a lot for that email. I really appreciate it, and just keep it up, man. Great stuff. So I'll hopefully talk to you later. Maybe I'll try shooting you an email instead, because that might be a little safer. But in any case, take care, and thanks a lot again for promoting a brand new show, Universe of Mystery. You know, we're just starting out, so really appreciate all the help, and it's really cool that that you've noticed us. So talk to you later, man. Talk to you later. Bye.
Well, thanks for calling me, Mike. I really do appreciate it. Now, first thing with the voicemail, as far as it going to Texas and Arizona and all kinds of different places, it's a service that I use called K7. And it's not really a call-in line so much as it is just a voicemail line. And they route it through different places every time somebody calls. So for the rest of you out there, if you happen to call and it's routing you through all these different places, no worries, because it should still get to me, I would think, as long as you're calling the right numbers. Yeah, it's kind of an odd service because it does route you through all these different places, and it makes things a little bit weird because you really don't know where you're calling, but you'll get to me one way or another. And if you have any problems with it, there is another phone line there. That's an 817 number. It's local here to DFW, but you can still call it because it's a Google voicemail number. So it just gives you a local number so people around you, if they live in your area, will feel comfortable calling that number. Anyway, again, it's just because of the service that I use. So I did get your call in, Mike, just to let you know. Now, Mike does have a good show. I do have to admit he's got a good show. I like listening to it. I enjoy it. So thank you for calling in, Mike. I really do appreciate it. As far as promoting new shows goes, I've always been one for promoting shows that are up and coming, that are by average everyday people, because for me, when I started, I wanted people to promote my show, and I've never thought of this show as being terribly great. I think it's okay. It's better than some and worse than others. But I've always been one for wanting to promote new shows because I wanted my show to be promoted in the beginning. And now, granted, yeah, I've only got 29 episodes out, but I've got some paranormal news along with that. I've done a lot of news segments for other shows. I've paid my dues in a little way, I think. But I, you know, just want to promote new shows. I appreciate the effort and the time that it takes to make a show, and because I've done it. I've seen what it entails and what effort you need to put into it to get it done, especially if you want one that has decent quality to it. So Mike, it's not a problem, man. I really do. I enjoy promoting new shows, new books, new anything that you want to promote. I'll even be promoting some new music here in just a little bit from somebody other than the IOTA PromoNet. You know, I really enjoy promoting new stuff. So if you're a podcaster out there and you don't think your show is the best out there, but you want to get some FaceTime to show a new group of people what you have going, send your promo to me. I'll be more than happy to throw it into the show. Like I said, I enjoy promoting stuff that is done by the average everyday person that just wants to do it for a hobby or wants to try something new. So anyway, I'll be quiet about that now. I do appreciate you calling in, Mike. I really, really do. Excuse me, my voice is awfully rough today. Anyway, I do appreciate you calling in, Lobo. Appreciate you calling in, Mike. If any of you guys ever have a comment, question, feedback, info, criticisms, whatever, give me a call. Leave me a voicemail. I'd love to hear what your opinion of the show is. I'd love to hear what you have to say. So please send it in. Again, I appreciate you guys calling in. And, let's get some promoting out there for stuff that is done by people like you and me. Let's get out there and help everybody out. Let's help each other out. I don't think there's enough of that in this world going on as it is right now. And I think at this point in time, with the way the economy is, we won't get into that. With the way things are in people's minds, the way their mindsets are right now, we need to help each other out just a little bit more. So you guys get out there and help some people out. Karma will come back around and it'll help you. Later on down the road, whenever you need it, something good will happen because of what you do today. Tomorrow will be better. So you guys, help each other out just a little bit. Now, a minute ago, I was saying that I wanted to promote some new music. And basically, that new music, you've already heard. The very first song that I had in the show today was by someone that I knew back in my heyday of my youth. I miss seeing these people. I opened up a new account in Facebook not too long ago, and I've made a lot of new friends, and I've found a lot of people I haven't seen in 15 or 20 years. So it's nice to connect with these people. But her name is Bonnie. Her band is called Sequoia, and the song you heard earlier was called Weary. And I'll provide a link to you guys on the 13skulls.com to go and download the song. I'll send you to her site, and you guys can, you can let her know for yourself what you think of her music. Personally, I think it's kind of eerie, kind of creepy, gives you some goosebumps. It's not the normal, heavy, hard-hitting music that I like to throw into the show, but it fits the show pretty well, I do believe. So anyway, thank you, Bonnie, for all your hard work in getting that song to me. So I really do appreciate you letting me share that with everybody, Bonnie. Thank you. All right, you guys, let's go ahead and move on and take a look at some of the articles that I've come across recently. And a lot of these were submitted by listeners. Some of them were really, really interesting. So let's go ahead and take a look at them. The first one is from ufoclearinghouse.webs.com, and that's from my man, Mr. Scorpion King. This is a Spanaway Washington UFO incident and possible military action against a UFO. It says on July 10th of 2009, this is actually the report that was given by the person. It says, my husband and I went to bed around 1:30 a.m. We were in bed for a few minutes and we heard a weird dat, dat, dat noise that was substantially loud. We live off of Fort Lewis and are used to the noise associated with the fort, but in 9 years, I've never had them randomly start shooting off at 1 to 2 in the morning. I got up and looked out the window to try and put an object to the noise. Was it a horse caught in a fence or kicking at the barn wall? Fireworks? What was it? I didn't see anything, so I went back to bed around 1 or 2 minutes later. We heard it again, but this time there were 3 different sounds of ammunition. So my husband got up and looked out the window and said it was coming from Fort Lewis. He went back to bed a minute later. It went off again, and I got back out of bed, and my husband got out of bed as well. We went to 2 different windows and looked outside. I had the view that was pointing to Fort Lewis. I saw tracers from the ammunition that was being shot from Fort Lewis. I thought that was odd. Again, in 9 years, I've never seen tracers of ammunition shut off from the fort. I continued to look outside and I saw blue spherical balls of light in the sky darting around and zigzagging through the sky. It was very apparent that someone, whether it was Fort Lewis or a private party, I don't know, was trying to shoot down this thing from the sky. The object was in the sky for about 10 seconds that I saw, and then it disappeared. Once it was gone, the shot stopped and we didn't hear anything for the rest of the night. In the morning, I went to work, traveling northbound on 8th Avenue, which I guess is in Spanaway, and as I drove by Fort Lewis, I saw they had a large wooden crate about 7 by 7 by 5, I'm guessing that's 7 feet by 7 feet by 5 feet, with large yellow warning signs tapped to the front of them. They were loading them onto an army truck. I don't know if this has anything to do with someone trying to shoot down the bouncy ball of light or not, but found it to be odd. I wouldn't see any reason for the military to be shooting off tracer rounds for no reason whatsoever. Maybe if they, I mean, if they're along the coast, maybe they were just keeping their guns in working order and shooting off some tracers. I mean, a darting ball of light, I mean, maybe I can see them using for night target practice, throwing out a couple of flares and target practicing at the flares. I can understand that. But the flares don't really dart around. So it makes me wonder if maybe they were using a laser pointer. I mean, they didn't say if it was cloudy or not. They didn't say what color the ball was. They just said that they saw these balls of light. Now, maybe it was cloudy and they had a laser pointer up in the sky and they were target practicing at the laser pointer. Who knows? I'm not really sure. But then again, maybe it was like that 1942, I believe it was, whenever the battle for Los Angeles happened, whenever they, you know, the military was actually shooting at a craft, and they actually have a picture of it. I posted it a long time ago, but anyway, it makes me wonder what they were shooting at. Now, the military does do target practicing, but the one thing that was kind of make me wonder whether or not it was someone other than the military, some private party, as they were saying, shooting at this object. You can, as a civilian, can get tracer rounds. They're just not that easy to come across. You can find them. Again, you'll pay an arm and a leg for them, too. They're not exactly the cheapest ammunition in the world. But anyway, it was an interesting story. Thank you, Scorp, for sending that in. We got a bunch of stuff to go through, as always, with this show. We have a bunch of stuff to go through, so I got to fly through it all. But thanks again, Scorp. I really do appreciate it. We'll be moving on to the next article, which is courtesy of naturalplane.blogspot.com. And it's called A Wedding Day Ghost Photo. And it's quite odd. It's actually, I'm looking at it right now. And it's early in the morning here in Texas. It's about 8:30 in the morning. Whenever I'm doing this recording, this is about the only time I had to do it. So it's actually creeping me out a little bit. I'm in a dark little room with doesn't have a whole lot of light, and you know, it's a little bit creepy. It'll show you the original photo. It'll show you a kind of greenish blown up copy of the part of the photo where the apparition, entity, ghost, whatever you want to call it, is at, and then it'll progressively show you larger photos, and the last big bottom photo that you see there, it looks like this creepy demon-like face is coming out of the trees, and it almost looks like its body is like reaching for the woman. It's because what you'll see is an older, like, it looks like an old black and white picture from like the 40s. It's an old picture, and it looks like this thing, this entity, ghost, whatever, is coming out of the trees and like reaching for this woman. Now, it could just be the way the trees are, but man, it is creepy. But anyway, the note from the photo says the photo was submitted to paranormal.about.com. The commentary from the owner of the photo and reader feedback is interesting. It says, this is a photo of my aunt's wedding day. The year was 1942, and the photo was taken by with a box camera. It's an interesting photo, and we have three possibilities. Number one, it's an extraordinary case of pareidolia, an illusion. Number two, it's a hoax, a very clever and well-executed one created with image editing software. Or number three, it's a genuine ghost. It says here, and I'm guessing this is the person that did the three possibilities, says, I'm not ready to say it's a genuine ghost, and I think it's too detailed to be pareidolia. So I suspect, and Liz, forgive me if I'm wrong, and I'm guessing Liz is the one that actually brought in the photo to be analyzed, that this is a manipulated photo. And my main reason for saying that is that the ghost is just too scary looking. Like something out of a horror movie, it's just too theatrical. Liz responds with something that says, I thank you for your feedback on the wedding day photo, but I do not agree. These pictures were taken before I was born. That's a long time ago. And when I saw the photos, they were never changed. There's a lot in this picture that no one can explain, and I think it's something paranormal. So Liz obviously thinks it's paranormal. I would like to see, well, see, even these days, there's going to be somebody out there that has the ability to Photoshop a picture that was taken in 1942. But at the same time, I can imagine that that would be a process that would take so much time and effort that it wouldn't be worth your time and effort. So I don't know. I want you guys to go take a look at the picture. I'll post a link up to the site of naturalplane.blogspot.com with this link, so you guys can go and take a look at it. It also has a link there to where the original photo was submitted to. So anyway, if you guys think it's real, think it's Photoshopped, go right ahead. I do agree with the guy that the picture is just a bit too theatrical, a little bit too scary. If it is real, then this is just a messed up photo. It's just messed up. It's creepy. You guys got to go take a look at it and see for yourself. It looks like a demon coming out of the trees. Now, the next article, again, is courtesy of naturalplane.blogspot.com, and it's a London cabbie that decapitated himself in front of a cafe. Now, I'm sure a lot of you have already heard about this, but I had to talk about it because it's just such a messed up way to die. It's such a messed up way to commit suicide. You had to have thought about this for a good little bit to come up with this idea. A taxi, now for those of you who haven't heard about this, a London cabbie basically wrapped a rope around a pole, wrapped the rope around his neck, got into his car, and put the gas pedal to the floor. And as he was driving, he, you know, sped off at a high speed, and he was in front of a 24-hour cafe. So there were people to witness this. Basically, he took off, and as soon as the rope tightened, you can only imagine what happened. His head was found yards away from his taxi on Great Suffolk Street in Southwark in London. Yeah, it's just messed up. I had to talk about this because some of the ways that people kill themselves is extremely, extremely creative. It's very, very creative, but very disturbing and messed up to show you what the human mind can come up with and actually go through with. Committing suicide has got to be a scary thing for most of the people that do it. And the reason I say that is because I've heard a lot of instances where people jump off of a bridge, and the ones who did survive, as soon as they jump, they realize that they just shouldn't have done it. They didn't want to. They wanted to change it as soon as they did it, but then it's too late. So the ones who have survived are really lucky. But this guy, it's creative. It really is, but it's disturbing at the same time that you could actually allow yourself to go through with something like that. Anyway, it's just messed up, and I had to talk about it for a minute. Okay, now, you guys, I've kind of lost track of who sent me what, so I'm just going to say thank you to everyone for the articles that you've submitted. Thank you very much. That was my little golf clap for you guys. I really do appreciate it. No, seriously, I really do appreciate it. You guys have been more than helpful. The show wouldn't be what it is without you guys. And, you know, keep sending in the interestingly weird stuff that you find. And if, you know, if I can, I'll throw it into the show. This article is, I believe, sent to me by Gator Bobo, by Mr. Bobo himself. It's courtesy of FoxNews.com. And it's the giant Alaskan blob mystery solved. Now, I don't know if any of you guys have actually heard about this, but a while back, there was this giant blob of weird stuff in Alaska that they had found, and nobody could figure out what it was. It says that big oily black blob floating around in the Arctic north of Alaska, well, it's perfectly natural, according to scientists. We got the results back from the lab today. Ed Meggert of the State Department of Environmental Conservation told the Anchorage Daily News last week that it was marine algae. No one in the area, whether biologist, Inuit hunter, or oil worker, had ever seen anything like this strange stuff, which moved through the Chukchi Sea, hopefully I'm saying that right, last week between the towns of Barrow and Wainwright. It stank, trapped seabirds in its gooey mass, and perhaps most alarmingly, was pretty hairy. And most marine algae is green, yellow, or red, and not black. But Terry Whitledge, director of the Institute of Marine Science at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks, said the color might mean the algae was partially rotting. Filamentous algae, he said after being emailed a photo of the stuff, it just means it's stringy. It's just weird. It really is. It's just strange to know that there's this stuff floating around that looks like just a big black oily blob. Now, I can see the biologist, I can see the oil workers not having ever seen something like this before. But you would think that the Inuit hunters, the Inuits, the people that have lived there for centuries, would have seen something like this before. Now, maybe not. Things like this happen and it's strange. But anyway, I'll provide a link up to it and you guys can go and take a look at it for yourself. Now, the next thing that I wanted to take a look at is something that my nephew, Colin, sent to me again. And I just thought it was really neat to know some of the movies that they're coming out with recently. And this is courtesy of YouTube.com. Thanks again, Colin, for sending that in. Thanks, Bobo. Thanks, everybody, for sending in the articles that you have. I really do appreciate it. Now, this is an official trailer for the movie Nine. And Nine takes place in a world parallel to our own, in which the very legacy of humanity is threatened. A group of sapient ragdolls living in a post-apocalyptic existence find one of their own, Nine, who's played by Elijah Wood, who displays leadership qualities that may help them to survive. And they're almost kind of like little burlap sack rag dolls. They kind of look like Little Big Planet, burlap sack guy. They almost kind of look like that, but it looks really good. The animation on it looks fantastic. It's amazing what has come around since I was a child watching Rocky and Bullwinkle. So anyway, I just thought it was neat. It's an interesting movie that looks like it's going to be coming out in September. So you guys go take a look at it, and maybe it's another movie that you guys can enjoy this fall.
Opening the door to the unknown. Download episodes of Eerie Radio directly from iTunes or visit their website at www.eerieradio.com.
Supernatural Existence is a podcast where we talk about the latest in the paranormal and discuss the most recent experiences in the supernatural. We even have a phone line and you can call in and share your take on the entire thing. Or you can just listen and learn about the many different investigations currently going on today. Join us and discover all there is to know about the countless mysteries currently taking place in our universe. You can subscribe via iTunes, or you can check out our website at www.globide.com. I'm your host, Byron Sanchez, and I invite you to join us in our journey through the mysterious and the unknown, and through the potential existence of the supernatural.
Flesh is floating.
Get up and kill.
I'm up to
mindless walking corpse.
Zombies.
Been walked with the dead.
The Midnight Podcast is a weekly gore fest dedicated to everything zombie. Go to midnightpodcast.com and prepare to bleed.
Now, the next thing that I wanted to share with you guys is just, it's a new podcast that I found. I don't have a promo for them. I just wanted to mention them. They're at DallasGhost.org, and it's the DAPSCast. It's the Dallas Area Paranormal Society's podcast, and they talk about ghost hunting and stuff like that that they do here locally in the DFW area, in the whole Metroplex area. And I figured for anyone that's local here, Sully J., if you're listening, man, you should go take a listen to them. They're pretty good if you haven't already. It's a good show. I really enjoy it myself because it's local here to where I'm living at. And, you know, sometimes it's kind of hard to find something decent to listen to locally. So for anybody out there that's in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex area, if you like hearing about paranormal stuff that's local to around here, go to DallasGhost.org. I'll post a link up to it so you guys can go and subscribe to it and take a listen to the show. Well, the next article that I wanted to take a look at, you guys, is courtesy of FoxNews.com. It was sent to me by Gator Bobo, and it's the Russian Navy reveals its secret UFO encounters. It sounds like the classic science movie The Abyss, only in Russian. The Russian Navy has declassified its records of UFO encounters, many of which take place in or around water, reports the website of the English language Russian news channel Russia Today. They are most often seen in the deepest part of the Atlantic Ocean, in the southern part of the Bermuda Triangle, and also in the Caribbean Sea, said one of the naval intelligence officers quoted by the website, by the Russia Today website. Another incident cited involved six unknown objects that followed a nuclear submarine in the Pacific. When the sub surfaced, so did the objects, which then lifted themselves out of the water and flew away. In perhaps the most compelling account, military divers in Siberia's Lake Baikal, the world's deepest lake, encountered a group of humanoid creatures dressed in silvery suits at a depth of 160 feet. Three humans died during the ensuing chase. And there's a link there to where you can read more in the Russia Today website. It is an English language website, so you should be able to read it, but it's really wild. I mean, maybe they were alien divers? Maybe? I don't know. I'm not really sure. The little silvery suits at 160 feet is just quite odd, but maybe this goes along with the USOs, the unidentified submerged objects, the ones where they say that the object needs to go into the water because they use water as a form of propulsion, I believe they take the hydrogen out of the water and use the hydrogen to have nuclear fusion of some kind. Anyway, I'm not really positive. I'm not a scientist. I don't know. These things are going on memory here. I'm getting old. I don't have a great memory anyway, but anyway, I just thought it was really neat. For you guys that want to go take a look at, I'll provide a link to it. And like I said, there's a link there to the original thing that you can read from the website Russia Today. Now, the next thing that I wanted to take a look at is for you guys out there that are fans of Lost. Now, I'm a huge fan of Lost, a major, major, major fan of Lost. I don't know if any of you have actually watched or listened to anything from the Comic-Con in San Diego where they had the Lost panel, anything like that. Well, this video is a video that they showed at the Comic-Con. It's Mysteries of the Universe, the Dharma Initiative, and basically it's a television series that aired in the 1980s. And for any of you that don't watch Lost, Lost takes a lot of real-life stuff and makes, like old TV shows, and they'll make it to where it's almost like it's really happening in real life. They'll take stuff that's really happening or stuff that has actually happened, real books, real things, and incorporate it into their show. And this is basically a video about a brand new feature shown from ABC reveals hidden secrets about the world of Lost. This week's focus is on the Dharma Initiative. And you can go visit youtube.com/latestlost and you'll get more more stuff about Lost on there. But this video is an episode of the short-lived television series Mysteries of the Universe. The topics explored may be of particular interest to the fans of Lost. I'm not going to tell you much about it because there is a part one and a part two. You'll have a link there to be able to watch part two. But I just think if anybody out there is a fan of Lost, you're really going to enjoy this video. All right, now I've gotten a lot of stuff, a lot of really good stuff from Rogan. It's courtesy of Reuters, however you want to say it. You guys, particular to your enunciation of words, basically I'm going to pronounce it however my redneck butt wants to pronounce it. And if you really, really don't like it, don't listen to the show. But it's courtesy of that website.com, Reuters, however you want to say it. And I've already heard about this on another show, but I just thought it was really weird, the rituals and things people will do. And it's naked girls plow fields for rain. In Patna, India, farmers in an eastern Indian state have asked their unmarried daughters to plow parched fields naked in a bid to embarrass the weather gods to bring some badly needed monsoon rain. That's according to the officials. Witnesses said the naked girls in Bihar state plowed the fields and chanted ancient hymns after sunset to invoke the gods. They said elderly village women helped the girls drag the plows. They, the villagers, believed their acts would get the weather gods badly embarrassed, who in turn would ensue bumper crops by sending rains. This is the most trusted social custom in the area, and the villagers have vowed to continue this practice until it rains heavily. India this year suffered its worst start to the vital monsoon rains in 8 decades, causing drought in some states, which it all comes down to your beliefs. It really does. It all comes down to the beliefs that you have about, you know, spirituality and all that stuff. And personally, I don't know if going out there and getting a bunch of young girls to dance around or plow fields or whatever it is completely naked to get it to rain, I don't really understand. I mean, they said that it was going to embarrass the gods and then get it to rain. I don't know. I mean, you're born naked, so you weren't born with clothes on, so why would it make much difference to the gods that you have your clothes off plowing a field? I mean, embarrassing it, maybe. I don't really understand the correlation between being naked and getting it to rain, other than the fact that they said it would be embarrassing. But then I can say to that, well, you know, you were born naked. You didn't have clothes on when you were born, so it's natural to be naked. You don't find a shirt or pants or shoes or anything like that growing from trees. So if you had it growing from trees, I can understand that maybe, you know, that clothes would be natural. But anyway, I just thought it was really weird that they're getting naked and hoping that it'll rain. Now, this next article was sent to me again from Gator Bobo. Like I said, we got a lot of listener-submitted content for this episode. I just wanted to take a look at it all. And this was really interesting. It says the Incan Empire was aided by global warming. It says a 400-year warm spell helped the ancient Inca to build the largest empire ever to exist in the Americas, at least according to a new study. Beginning around 1100 AD, the increase in temperature served as a perfect incubator for the Inca's expansion. And international team of researchers report in the current issue of the journal Climate of the Past. Climate warming does not always have to be a negative issue. Our research shows that it can favor societal development, lead author Alex Chepstow-Lusty, a paleoecologist from the French Institute for Andean Studies in Lima, Peru. Man, that's a mouthful. Anyway, it says the Inca ruled the largest empire on Earth, stretching from the present-day southern border of Colombia to central Chile. Because the Inca language has no written form, it has long been considered the only major Bronze Age civilization without a written language. And due to the destruction of their heritage by the Spanish, the details of their meteoric rise have remained a mystery. Now, Chepstow-Lusty and colleagues at the University of France in the United Kingdom and the United States have found reliable witnesses sources to recount the most important times of the Inca Empire. Pollen and seeds buried in layers of mud on the floor of Lake Marcachoca of the Cuzco region in the Peruvian Andes. Similar to the rings in the trunk of a tree, each layer of sediment represents a fixed period in time. In the case of the seeds in the lake, the researchers were able to analyze a 1,200-year-old sediment record. This record reveals a period of sustained aridity that began from AD 880, followed by increased warming from AD 1100 that lasted beyond the arrival of the Spanish in AD 1532. I just thought it was really interesting that climate change can actually be a positive thing in certain ways. Now, granted, it's not going to be positive for everything, but what is? What is always positive for everything? Nothing. There is nothing that is positive for everything at one time. It's going to be positive for one and not positive for the other. You switch it around just the opposite of that, and that's going to be positive for one and not for the other. But, you know, nothing is ever going to be negative for everything or positive for everything. If all life on Earth is abundant in the next million years and way better off than what we are right now, then what is going on right now is positive for us. May not be positive for something else, who knows? But if, you know, if the world gets destroyed, then it's positive for some reason. We just don't know what it is. Anyway, I know I'm going off in a weird tangent there that doesn't probably make a whole lot of sense, but it makes sense in my mind, and the words come out rather difficult sometimes. But there isn't one thing that is always negative or always positive for everything at one time. And the fact that climate warming or global warming, whatever you want to call it, was positive for the Incas is just an interesting tidbit of information to know. Who knows? Maybe the global warming that they whoever they might be, is saying is going on right now might be a positive thing for us in 20 years, might be a negative thing for us in 20 years. But what's negative for us in 20 years might be good for us in 100. Who knows? Anyway, I just thought it was really interesting. I'll post a link up to it because there is quite a bit more and a video to this article. So I want you guys to go take a look at it, finish reading it, and take a look at the video. It's really quite interesting. Now, this next article was sent to me by Gator Bobo again, and I just could not pass this one up because somebody is actually going and looking for it. These journalists are going to hunt for the acid-spitting Mongolian death worm. Now, I just find it interesting that no one's ever seen one as far as what I've read, and it kills people. But it's never been seen. Anyway, the article is courtesy of news.com.au. I'll provide a link up to it so you guys can go and finish reading it because there is, you know, a little bit to this article. You can go and take a look at the death worm. It says, armed with explosives, two men are heading to Mongolia's Gobi Desert to find the fabled acid-spitting and lightning-throwing Mongolian death worm. The worm has never been documented, but some Mongolians are convinced that it exists. They call it Algoi Korkoi. I hope I pronounced that right, or intestine worm, because it resembles a cow's intestine and is about 1.5 meters long. It's a pretty good sized worm. The worm apparently jumps out of the sand and kills people by spitting concentrated acid or, and I find this most interesting, shooting lightning from its rectum over a long distance. New Zealand TV entertained journalist David Ferrier, who is organizing the expedition, and the cameraman Christy Douglas leave this week to spend 2 weeks in the Gobi Desert trying to verify the worm's existence and making a documentary about it. Ferrier said that he had always been fascinated by cryptozoology, and the expedition and the documentary would take a serious look at the worm and what it was. He said he was interested in the death worm because it was one of the most outrageous creatures that were ever rumored to exist. However, it was also one of the mythical creatures that had a better chance of being real. Now, yeah, there might be a death worm, but I tell you what, I want to see anything ever in that has ever existed ever that could shoot lightning out of its butt. I mean, I can see something shooting acid out of its mouth. That I can understand. I mean, there's venom, things like that. There's a spitting snake. There's, you know, there's all kinds of, there's weird stuff. But I would actually let myself get shot in the face with this lightning bolt just to see that it actually worked. I mean, seriously, you're going to shoot lightning out of your butt. I want to see that. I want to see that. If that exists, if somebody could show me a worm that shoots lightning from its butt, then I am going to believe anything and everything anyone ever tells me again for the rest of my natural born life. This is just the most exaggeratedly odd, strange, bizarre thing that I've ever heard of. Now, yeah, there might be a Mongolian death worm, but I highly, highly, highly doubt that it's going to be shooting lightning out of one of its orifices at all. So anyway, like I said, there's more to this article. I'll post a link up to it for you guys to go take a look at and see a little bit more about the Mongolian acid spitting, lightning shooting death worm.
Oh my God, look, it's coming back.
Many were infected. Infected with a disease that thinks. A disease that talks. And as the victims finally succumbed, a disease that walks. One man fought back. He resisted the voices. Perry Dawsey carved out pieces of himself in a desperate attempt to survive. He won. But as Perry awakes in a government hospital, he realizes he can still hear those voices. It's not over. And now it's even worse. Because the infection has become contagious. Contagious is the bloody sequel to Scott Sigler's horror thriller, Infected. Contagious is available in stores December 30th, or reserve your copy now at scottsigler.com/pre-order. Get the book the day it comes out, because if someone spoils the ending, you'll hate yourself enough to use the chicken scissors.
Available now on podiobooks.com.
Mine!
As day four in the Seventh Son adventure begins, John Alpha's quest for anarchy and genocide enters its final stage. At every turn, the global terrorist has been triumphant. The world is reeling from a nuclear attack. An unprecedented energy crisis is upon us. Alpha himself has exclusive access to the White House and secret weapons primed to propel his conspiracy into the endgame. Amidst this turmoil, the Seventh Son Project's four surviving beta clones must defy their creators and hunt Alpha on their terms. Their mission? To stop the greatest assassination plot in history. The secrets John and his brothers discover will press them toward a final battle with their progenitor. a battle in which the clones are outgunned, outnumbered, and out of time. Seventh Son, Book 3, Destruction, is the final chapter in J.C. Hutchins' chart-topping audiobook thriller trilogy. Find the entire series, including Book 1, Descent, and Book 2, Deceit, at jchutchins.net and at audiobooks.com.
Available now on audiobooks.com.
The grand design of nine.
Those words haunt the mind of Brinkvale psychiatric therapist, Zach Taylor, when his elderly patient, a remorseless killer, utters that phrase. Zach embarks on a quest to glean its cryptic meaning. The answers lie with the patient's psychic granddaughter. But Hen is crazier than the people Zach treats, and the mystical great blade of blood he soon pursues may be more dangerous and deadly than Zach ever imagined. J.C. Hutchins' Personal Effects, Sword of Blood, is a prequel audio novella to his supernatural thriller novel, Personal Effects, Dark Art. Learn more about both stories and become a part of the Personal Effects universe at jchutchins.net.
Oh my God, look, it's coming back.
All right, well, the next article that I wanted to take a look at is something that I just really found interesting, and it's courtesy of naturalplane.blogspot.com. Again, they always have really good stuff, but this is the 10 incredibly bizarre and crappy ways to die. And I'm just going to go through these, give you a little bit of description on it. And the first one is the method of death is murdered by monks with shells. Hypatia of Alexandria was a Greek scholar from Alexandria in Egypt, considered the first noble woman in mathematics, who also taught philosophy and astronomy. One day in March of 415, during the season of Lent, her chariot was waylaid on her route home by a Christian mob, possibly monks led by a man identified only as Peter, who is thought to be Peter the Reader, Cyril's assistant. The Christian monks stripped her naked and dragged her through the streets to the newly Christianized Caesarea Church, where she was brutally killed. Some reports suggested she was flayed with seashells and pot shards and set ablaze while still alive. Whew, that would be a bad way to die. The next one I thought was bizarre, just straight up bizarre. Strap-on head infected him and he died. Sigurd Eysteinsson, aka Sigurd the Mighty, ruled from 875 to 892, was the second Viking Earl of Orkney who succeeded his brother Reginald the Wise. He was a leader of the Viking conquest of what is now northern Scotland. He died as a result of one of the native rulers he killed. He beheaded the man and strapped his head to his saddle. As he rode, the man's teeth grazed against his leg, causing a wound that infected him and killed him. Very odd. The next one is being eaten alive. As we all know, being eaten alive would not be fun. These have some very odd, I believe more Nordic Swedish looking names, so I'm not even going to try it. They basically said that the person was condemned to sit on a red hot iron throne with a red hot iron crown on his head and a red hot scepter in his hand by Hungarian landed nobility in Transylvania. So it's obviously Hungarian. I was way off with who it was from. So anyway, it says while he was still alive, he was set upon and his partially roasted body was eaten by six of his fellow rebels who had starved for a week beforehand. So somebody put some good thought into that to starve these guys so they'll eat him whenever he's cooked. Anyway, I just thought it was really weird. Suicide by courtesy of MacGyver skills. Yes, MacGyver skills. As William Cogut was an inmate on death row at San Quentin, decided to commit suicide using only the rudimentary tools available to him in his prison cell. He began tearing up several packs of playing cards, giving particular focus to obtaining pieces with red ink, which is flammable and, when wet, can create an explosive mixture, and stuffed them into a pipe. He then plugged one end of the pipe firmly with a broom handle and poured water into the other end and soaked the card pieces. He then placed the pipe over a kerosene heater next to his bed and placed the open end firmly against his head. The heater turned the water into steam, and eventually enough pressure built up inside the pipe that when it burst, the explosion shot out the bits of playing cards with enough force to penetrate his skull, which killed him. In a suicide note, the man stated that he and he alone should punish himself for his crimes. Sometimes people do weird things, and like I said, sometimes it is very, very creative. And the next one is fell down a chimney. In 1939, well-known Finnish actress Sirkka Saari was, hopefully, I'm sorry if I did butcher that, was celebrating the premiere of her new film, A Rich Girl, at the Hotel Aulunko. During the celebration, she climbed the stairs to the roof of the hotel. At the top of the stairs, she opened the door and saw a black rectangular area, which she thought was asphalt. She mistook it for a scenery deck and jumped right into it. Unfortunately for her, it was actually a chimney. She fell to her death in the boiler room at the bottom. Man, sounds to me like somebody was doing a little too much drinking, and So anyway, eccentricity is the next form of death. The Collier brothers, extreme cases of eccentric compulsive hoarders, were found dead in their home in New York in 1947. The younger brother, Langley, died by falling victim to a booby trap that he had set up, causing a mountain of objects, books, and newspaper to fall on him, crushing him to death. His blind brother, Homer, who had depended on Langley for care, died of starvation some days later. Their bodies were recovered after massive efforts in removing many tons of debris from their home. Whew. Well, let's just say that it's a bad idea to actually make booby traps when you're a hoarder. So anyway, the next one is murdered with an umbrella. Okay, Ivanov Markov was a Bulgarian dissident writer. In order to silence him, the Bulgarian government decided to have him killed and asked the KGB for help. On September 7, 1978, Markov walked across a Waterloo Bridge spanning the River Thames. Or Times, I'm not sure exactly. Some people are a little bit picky as to how you pronounce that. Anyway, and was waiting at the bus stop on the other side when he was jabbed in the calf by a man holding an umbrella. The man apologized and walked away. I knew I had heard about this before. Markov would later tell doctors that the man had spoken in a foreign accent. Markov recalled stinging pain where he had been hit. He assumed that it was by the umbrella tip. That evening, he developed a high fever and was admitted to a hospital where he died 3 days later. The cause of death was from poisoning from a ricin-filled pellet. I actually remember hearing about that story quite a while back. That was really weird, but very ingenious way to do it if you were going to. The next one is killed by a flying lawnmower. John Bowen, a 20-year-old of Nashua, New Hampshire, was attending a halftime show at a football game at Shea Stadium in December 9th of 1979, during an event which featured novelty and custom remote control flying machines. A 40-pound model plane shaped like a lawnmower accidentally dived into the stands with its sharp blade striking Bowen and another spectator and causing severe head injuries. While the other spectator survived, Bowen died in the hospital 4 days later. See, you go and you want to have just a little bit of fun at a football game. The next thing you know, the most odd thing is happening. You're getting killed by a lawnmower. It's just really weird. The next one is diving into a hot pool that's near boiling point. I guess you'd really kind of experience what happens to a lobster at that point. David Allen Kerwin, a 24-year-old, attempted to rescue a friend's dog after it fell into a Celestine pool. A hot spring at Yellowstone National Park on July 20th, 1981. I actually remember hearing about that. I'm sorry for having made fun of that. That was actually a pretty cool thing to do, to go in to try and rescue a dog, because I have two dogs and two cats myself, so I love animals, and hey, I'd do it too. So more power to you, Dave. Good job, man. Hate that you died, but Hopefully you save the dog. It says, despite numerous shots from bystanders, Kerwin dove headfirst into the pool but was unable to save the dog. Well, I guess he didn't. After managing to swim back to shore, he was helped out of the pool, where his injuries became apparent. Exposure to the 200-degree Fahrenheit or 93-degree Celsius water at the hot spring resulted in third-degree burns to 100% of his body and also blinded him. After being led to the sidewalk, Kerwin reported stated, that was stupid. How bad am I? That was a stupid thing I did. Yeah, dude, I hate to say that was pretty stupid. But at the same time, if you didn't know, you weren't ready for it, you had no idea. You know, I mean, things happen, man. So, got to give you credit where credit is due. And you get credit due there for trying to save a dog, man. So, more power to you, man. I hate that you died, but things happen. Anyway, the last one is being decapitated by an elevator. Dr. Hitoshi Nakaido, a surgical doctor, was decapitated as he stepped onto an elevator at Christus St. Joseph Hospital on August 16th of 2003. According to a witness inside the elevator door closed as Nakaido entered, trapping his head inside the elevator with the remainder of his body outside. His body was later found at the bottom of the elevator shaft, while the upper portion of his head, severed just above the lower jaw, was found in the elevator. A subsequent investigation revealed that improper electrical wiring installed by a maintenance company several days earlier had effectively bypassed all of the safeguards. I think I saw something like that in Resident Evil. There was a girl that was partially sticking out in an elevator. Anyway, I just thought it was really weird and very interesting in very bizarre ways to die. Now, the next article that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of news.com.au again. And a cannibal now wants love on the menu. Oh, this is really weird. Cannibals are strange. It says an Indonesian cannibal is seeking love, promising his people-eating days are over. Sumantu, currently residing in rural central Java, was jailed after he dug up an old woman's body for a cheap and tasty meal. She was delicious, he told AFP from his room at the Muslim Mental Rehabilitation Center in rural central Java. I love meat. All types of meat as long as it's cooked, but I don't eat people anymore. But after a lengthy stint in prison, the former farmer now longs for the taste of love. Sumanto said his cannibal days are over and that spinach was all he ate nowadays in a bid to be accepted back into normal village life. Yeah, I think if you dig somebody up and eat them, you might always be listed as a cannibal. Once a cannibal, always a cannibal, man. Especially if you're going to eat a decomposing body. I think it might have just been a little bit easier for you to go out and kill a pig or a dog or a cat or a squirrel or anything other like that. I don't know what animals you have in Java, but I'm sure there's something you could have killed and eaten. But anyway, I just think it's really funny that he wants love now. He wants to be loved. He wants his little bit of love. Yeah, I wonder if the family, that old woman he dug up, would give him any love. But anyway, I just thought it was just weird. I always find cannibal stuff to be very interesting. So anyway, let's move on to the next article before I get myself in too big of a hole. This is courtesy of StarTelegram.com, and it's a couple that say they saw the Lake Worth Monster in Fort Worth 40 years ago. Greer Island, a small patch of land close to where the West Fork of the Trinity River falls into Lake Worth, is heavily shaped by tall oaks, cedar elms, and cottonwoods. It says that these people saw the Lake Worth Monster 40 years ago when all of Texas seemed to buzz with the news that a hairy, scaly, 7-foot man-goat beast was terrorizing the good citizens of Tarrant County. Perhaps the monster moved on to less populated environments and maybe it's dead by now, his bones to be discovered decades later by a lucky anthropologist. I don't really know. People basically said that they saw it there. There's a lot of what they said there. It's quite a long article. I'm not going to go into it because we're already, God, running over an hour now. So anyway, I'll leave that for the rest of you guys to go and take a look at and finish reading the rest of this story. It's just strange that now that, it's been 40 years later, they're actually telling their story that they saw this thing in July of 1969. It's just really, really interesting. So you guys go and take a look at it and give me an idea of what you think about the Lake Worth Monster, especially a few people that are local here. If you've ever been to Lake Worth, if you've ever experienced it or seen it or know anybody that's seen it, share your story. I'd love to hear it and share it with everybody else. The next article is courtesy of naturalplane.blogspot.com, and it's Ogopogo spotted on Google Earth. And it's quite an odd picture, and to be honest with you, it really does look like it could be an Ogopogo, a plesiosaur, the Loch Ness Monster, that type of creature. There are several pictures there that you can go and take a look at. There is a wiki there for Ogopogo for any of those who don't know who that is. But an enhanced satellite photo of Ogopogo from Google, Flipper comparisons from pictures from Wikipedia, plesiosaurs and Loch Ness Monster, the Loch Ness Monster, who would have thunk it, that the quest for the lake monsters would be given a significant boost by Google. Poster included a marvelous satellite photo of what could be Ogopogo. It's difficult to determine a complete outline for the animal in the enlarged picture because of the glare from the water. People have they've tried to clarify what the picture really is. And down at the bottom, it shows you, I mean, this is a really long article that go through, it'd take forever, but it could be, you know, just a group of fish. But at the same time, if you look at it, it does look like it could be a plesiosaur. I don't know if it is, because it is relatively close to the shoreline. I mean, as far as I know, it could be anything. It really could be anything. So I want you guys to go take a look at it and let me know you know, what you think about this possibly being Ogopogo on Google Earth. Anyway, let's move on to the next article, which is courtesy of advertiser24.co.uk. And it's ghost captured on a camera in Norwich. It would add a whole new meaning to the word scary movie, but a ghost could have been captured on camera at the Northwich Cinema. City-based photographer Andrew Kilt felt chills down his back as he processes pictures from a photo shoot at Cinema City. As he flicked between two images of the venue's courtyard, he noticed a shadow in one of the pictures that was absent from the next shot in the sequence. Zooming in on the image of his computer, Mr. Kitt saw what looked suspiciously like a figure. As he looked closer, it appeared as a hunched shape wearing what could be, with little imagination, a Tudor-style dress. The hair on the back of my neck went up when I first saw it. I'm not keeping an open mind. I'm not saying it's a ghost or anything, but it's certainly strange. He took the picture from steps overlooking the courtyard at about 10:40 p.m. one night last month, and while I cannot explain the shot, he is adamant that it has not been tampered with in any way. The most likely explanation for the picture is that someone walked across the shot as he was taking it. The spot at which the figure appears is close to the kitchen door, which is used constantly by waiting staff. It's interesting, the photo is there for you guys to go and take a look at. The guy says that it's not tampered with. He said that it was, you know, in one shot and not the next. Which could be true. That could be very well true. But how much time was in between the shot that had the image in it and the next shot? If he took that one shot and then immediately took another shot, literally half a second later or a second later, chances are that person or whatever it is would still be in the image, given that there was enough room for them to walk at a decent pace and still be in the frame of the picture. But if he waited 30 seconds for the next shot, then chances are there's not going to be anyone there to get in the picture. Now, if he did take the pictures directly, one right after the other, you know, less than a second apart or whatever, then, you know, I can see how it would be a strange anomaly. But at the same time, I mean, you don't know how much time was there in between when he took the two shots. If anybody's heard anything about it, let me know. It doesn't say here how long it was in between those shots. So anyway, I just thought it was interesting. Wanted to share that, guys, with you. Let's take a little break and I'll be right back. All right, now this next thing that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of telegraph.co.uk, and it's a UFO spotted during a morning TV broadcast. Now, sadly, I don't know where the video to this is, but there is a picture there of it. And it basically says a UFO is captured flying across the screen during a morning news broadcast in Newcastle. The mysterious flying object was captured as news anchor Colin Briggs read the BBC breakfast headlines on Look North at 9:05 on Wednesday morning. A webcam filming in an area of the River Tyne recorded a streak of white light shooting upwards at a 45-degree angle, traveling at considerable speed. In the footage, the speeding projectile appears from the lower left-hand side of the screen and seems to pass under the wide arch of Newcastle's Millennium Bridge before disappearing out of the top of the screen. The clip, which has since been uploaded onto video sharing website YouTube, is eliciting theories ranging from model airplanes to potential swamp gas. They can say that. I haven't been able to find it. Anyway, if anybody does find it, let me know and I'll post it up so people can take a look at it. The webcam was filming a section of the River Tyne, which is also includes the Saga Music Venue, Gateshead, and Tyne Bridge. Nick Pope, a former Ministry of Defense UFO investigator, said, "At first I thought it was a bird, but the slowed down footage seems to rule this out. It's an intriguing film and a genuine mystery." In a later broadcast, Mr. Briggs said, "A question worthy of Crime Watch. Were you watching a TV around 9:05 yesterday morning? Did you see the breakfast headlines and did you spot something suspicious in the screen behind me? Have a look. Is it a bird? Is it a plane? What is it? We don't know. Perhaps you can help. If so, do let us know and remember, don't have nightmares." Very strange, very strange. I don't know anybody that would have nightmares about something like that moving across the sky. But again, I looked for it, couldn't find the video. If anybody can find the video, maybe it's just me using the wrong search terms, the wrong keywords, I don't know. But if anybody can find it, send it to me. Please let me know. I'd love to watch the video. All right, now the last thing that I wanted to take a look at was something that I just couldn't pass up to put into the show. I really couldn't. Whenever I found this, I was really, really, really amazed. Now, granted, this is a picture. It's courtesy of naturalplane.blogspot.com, and it's a monolith structure captured on NASA Mars Orbiter camera. Now, who knows whether or not this was actually taken on the surface of Mars? Nobody knows. It's just a black and white satellite picture. Could be something here on Earth. There's nothing describable about it or nothing that stands out that would let you know exactly that this really is on Mars. But it is a satellite photo, and there are three up-close images that are progressively closer and progressively grainier of the image that you're looking at, and it does appear to be a tall, rectangular-shaped object that has a shadow that gives you the basic idea of what the object looks like by the way the shadow looks like. Doesn't really let you know how tall it is because shadows can be deceiving, but it is a square or rectangularly tall object. Like you take a rectangle and stand it up on its small end. So it's taller than it is wide. Rather than laying on its side, it's wider than it is tall. So anyway, it says that an image of what appears to be a mysterious rocky monument on Mars has excited space junkies around the world. The monolith was snapped from 165 miles away using a special high-resolution camera on board the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. After being published on the website Lunar Explorer Italia, it set tongues wagging with space buffs questioning whether there was once life on the red planet. But scientists at the University of Arizona who captured the original image reckon it's just an unremarkable boulder, which could measure up to 5 meters across. Unremarkable? Maybe. But it's square. Israel Spinoza, spokesman for the high-rise department of the university's Lunar and Planetary Laboratory, gave Mail Online the original images so readers can make up their own minds. He said it would be unwise to refer to it as a monolith or structure because that implies something artificial, like it was put there by someone, for example. In reality, it's more likely that this boulder has been created by breaking away from the bedrock to create a rectangular-shaped feature. The image seems to resemble the black monolith that appears during key moments of man's evolution in the Stanley Kubrick film 2001, A Space Odyssey. The original image, taken last July, was published again this week at the University of Arizona's high-rise website on the Spotlight page, which seems to have led to the renewal of interest. Speaking on the satellite picture, scientist Alfred McEwen, the principal investigator from the University of Arizona's high-rise department, said, "There are a lot of rectangular boulders on Earth and Mars and other planets. Layering from rock deposition combined with tectonic fractures creates right-angled planes of weakness such that the rectangular blocks tend to weather out and separate from the bedrock. The building-sized monolith is the main proposed landing site, but not because scientists suspect UFO activity. They believe the object is a boulder exposed relatively recently in an otherwise featureless area. The fact that it seems to resemble a rectangular monument could be due to simulacra. This is where humans see familiar images in random surroundings, such as the famous face on Mars, which is actually just a hilly and cratered area." Anyway, I just thought it was really neat. I want you guys to go and take a look at it and let me know what you think. What do I think? I personally think that, you know, it's hard to tell exactly what it is. It could be a monolith. It could just be a square block. The only thing that gets me is that this square, rectangular-shaped object is standing tall in an otherwise featureless desert sandy looking area. Now there's a lot of parts of Mars that have a lot of rocky area to it. A lot of boulders, a lot of rocks, a lot of rough terrain. This looks like smooth sandy like desert dunes. And there's just this large rock standing straight up right there in front of it. It almost looks like a tall high-rise building that you would see here on Earth in a major city on Mars. But who's to say? It could be 2 feet tall and just a square little rock. I mean, it is a photo from 165 miles up. So even though it does have a lot of really good imaging on that orbiter, it's still not perfect. And it's still grainy the closer you look at it. And given that this photo made it out and it's not been altered, makes me wonder whether or not it's real and whether or not it was actually meant to be let go to the public or not. Because from what I've heard, a lot of stuff that NASA takes pictures of gets doctored before it makes it out to the public. So where did this photo come from? Anyway, I just thought it was really neat. We're going to have to close the show out, y'all. It's getting long. I appreciate everybody coming out. Let's go ahead and take one last break, and we'll be right back.
Heroes back in line, and lightings decline. This hero is set to die. The payback by default. 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 The news is set to sing. The tales of these at home. The countless burn to ground. Payback by default. Payback. 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 Payback.
All right, guys and gals, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I really do appreciate you coming out and taking a listen to the show. If you like the stuff that's in the show, just go to the13skulls.com and you'll find links to everything that I talked about and all the promos, everything that I've done on the show. You'll find links to it. Let's go ahead and get the formalities buried again because they seem to be climbing out of their hole and we can't keep them down. If you want to email the show, the email is 13skulls@gmail.com or info@the13skulls.com. If you want to call me and leave a message, the phone numbers are 206-338-2205 or 817-986-0019. And again, if you really want to support the show, I would really appreciate it. Give me a review on iTunes. Remember, there are two iTunes now. Pick the one that does not have the 13 Skulls logo on there. But if you do pick the old 13 Skulls logo, I'll be more than, you know, that feed for iTunes, I'll be more than happy. I really appreciate it. Anyway, give me a vote in Podcast Alley or let me know where you're listening from by signing the Frapper Map. We've had quite a few people sign the Frapper Map this past 2 weeks. I really do appreciate everybody signing up. I love to know where you're listening from. It's amazing where people are at that are finding this show. If you like the music that's in the show, it's courtesy of the IOTA PromoNet at iotaalliance.com. I'll post a link up to them. I'll also post links up to where you can find the music and download it if you like it. Or if you really like it, I'll post links up to where you can go and you can buy the music. And, you know, if you like it that much. So, you guys, I really do appreciate you coming out listening to the show. Again, I hope you have a great day, night, week, weekend, whatever it is that you're listening to the show. And as always, I will talk to you guys again on another day.
Payback, 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 payback.
baby.